listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Wally, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, all you listeners out there. This is Radio with Pictures, my God. Remember that in the old days, Radio with Pictures?
Was it Karen Hay?
Yeah.
Now you're a modern thing, Wally. Tell me, you wanted to be able to go live, we're live, then you complained that you couldn't see me, and now we've set it up that you can and I can see you. Everything you want happens.
Yeah, it's marvellous. The technology is great, great.
I feel it's been a while since I've seen you. You're looking youthful and refreshed. Has it been a good break from me that you've had?
I've missed you so much, and so many listeners out there. Uh-huh. They've been ringing me up and saying, why aren't you two on the air? We miss you, you know. And even some people rang up to say, are you people still alive?
Hmm? Oh, well, we both are alive and kicking. Tell us about beetles in your garden, Wally.
Beetles in the garden. Well, this time of the year, we have a bronze beetle, which proliferated in New Zealand. Once we settled in the country and removed all the bush and so forth, because it's a native. And in the days gone by, it used to feed on the native grasses, carrots, et cetera, et cetera. That is in regards to the grubs, which are in the soil, which later on pupate and become beetles. Now, when we came and cleared the land and turned it into grassland, it was like, wow, there's so much food. My God, we will be able to be beetles supreme. And they were. Like, I have had stories that people, particularly near the countryside or in the countryside, in the early part of the evening, they thought it was a swarm of bees, but it's a few thousand beetles coming in from the paddocks. And then what do? They munch up on your plants in your garden. They like beans, they like a whole range of stuff they'll munch up on. And you won't know what's caused the problem, because when you go out in the daytime, of course, they're not there. They're only there in the evening.
And this is called the bronze beetle?
Yeah, or the grass grub beetle.
Grass grub beetle. And is it throughout New Zealand?
Right throughout New Zealand, yeah, prolific. It's a really big problem. I remember one lady a few years back, she bought a block of land which had blueberries on it, right? And her idea was to pay the mortgage off by harvesting these blueberry plants and selling the berries, right? Well, she rang me up in tears. She said, there's all these beetles chewing up on my plants and the plants are getting decimated. I won't be able to pay my mortgage.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Literally thousands of them, right? So they're attracted by light. And the idea here, if you live in the country or even if you live in town and you have the beetles in your lawn or sometimes in container plants, particularly with cyclamen, they love cyclamen roots and bulbs, they eat them up, is to set up a bright light in a window at night looking out over your garden, right? Really strong light in the window. Then you put underneath the window a trough, like a wallpapering trough, which has got two-thirds full of water, and you float a bit of kerosene on the water. What happens is the beetles are attracted by the light. They zoom in, hit their heads on the window, drop down into the trough, and because of the kerosene, they can't get out. So next morning, you've got all these beetles here in the trough, which you can either feed to the chickens, if you've got chickens, or flush them down the toilet, if you've got a toilet. Well, some people have long drop stool, yeah. You know.
So yeah. This is a The beetle flies around and it lays an egg that becomes the grub.
Yep, yep, that's right.
And that grub eats everything.
In the lawn, it eats roots and roots of grasses. It's its preferred plant. But the beetles eat everything. I've already had people complaining that by such and such a tree or plant or whatever is getting eaten to bits and there's nothing there. And I say, well, it's the beetles at night. So what you do, if you've got that problem, you get your torch out just after dusk because that's when they start up. And you go out there and you have a look and you see the beetles on your plants, right?
Yep.
Then you make up some of our super pyrethrum. Now, the super pyrethrum is so strong that you only use 1 mil, that's basically a drop, into 2 litres of water. It's so powerful, right? And you have that made up into a sprayer, like a trigger sprayer. And when you go out with your torch, you've got your torch in one hand, your trigger in the other, and you go, shh, and hit them, just like you'd hit fly spray, right? Same principle. That, of course, affects the nervous system of the beetles, and they will die, just like flies die with fly spray. Same difference. You do that every night until such time as the activity stops, and that will help save your plants from being decimated. The lights at night, like street lights, people that have street lights outside their property, their lawns and that area will be infested with grass grub drops, and then later to emerge as beetles. So that's basically how to look after and sort out your beetle problem. But this can happen with other beetles too, any time of the year. If you've got plants that have been munched up, and if it's not the birds, because birds actually eat quite a few bits and pieces, then likely it's beetles, and you go out at night with a torch and find the beetles. And it's spelled B-E-E-T-L-E, not B-E-A, which I sometimes make the mistake and end up with John Lennon or somebody.
Yes, when you're writing your newsletter.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's an understandable mistake. So that's a dreaded grass grub. Is that a painful way to get rid of them?
Well, it's in the lawn, if you've got grass grub, it's round about autumn, which they are near the surface. The life cycle is the beetles are out on the wing for about 2 or 3 weeks, around about this time of the year. That's the main flux. Sometimes you can get a second lot, a smaller amount. They, of course, lay the eggs in the soil and they lay them deep. Little grubs hatch out and they're way down in the soil. During the summertime, when it gets dry, they actually hibernate and just rest up, waiting for the moisture to come. And then once the moisture comes, they eat their way up to the surface, eating on the roots of your grass. Now, in a particular time of the year, you could be mowing your lawn and strips of grass would just come off the lawn. Yes, they've got no roots. Right, yeah. Bit of a problem. So to control them in the lawn, when they're near the surface, and the only way to do this properly is you take your spade and you cut a wedge, a square in the lawn, right? Lift that up, and in doing so, you check on both sides. For the little white grubs, it will curl up when they're disturbed, right? If you've got 2 or 3 there, whoop-de-doo, they're not doing much damage. But if you've got quite a number of them there, they are going to cause your grass roots to be eaten away and the grass to fail. Right? Quite often in the wintertime, the grass will look all right, but as it starts to dry out, because it's got such short roots, they will just fizz and die. And people can treat with our neem tree powder, right? Now, this is the ideal way at the time when they're near the surface. is you spread the neem tree powder over the lawn after you've cut it, and then you give it a light watering to wash it down onto the soil. And if you've got a roller, ideally roll it then. To
so you actually put it on as a powder?
Yeah, neem tree powder.
How would you best spread that?
How do I get what, sorry?
How do you spread it? Just sprinkle it?
Oh, you just with your hand broadcast, you know, like you're feeding the chickens or whatever. Okay. But it, some people have a little machine that they turn the handle and it's applied at 50 grams per square meter, or if you've got a bad infection, maybe 100 grams per square meter.
Then you water it.
And then you lightly water it to wash it down to the soil. And if you've got a roller, you roll it to press it into the soil. Now, what happens is the neem oil in the powder will leach out with rain and watering and get down into the soil and be on the roots of the plants. Then when the little grub takes a bite of the plant root, they get a dose of neem, stop eating, starve to death. End of story. Simple as that.
How do you tell if your grubs are near the surface?
By getting your spade, cutting a square, lifting up that piece and having a look on both sides. If they're within that inch, couple of inches of the topsoil, then time to treat. If there's none there, but the thing is, on a lawn, you might have an area which you've had problems in the past, an area which is near light at night, and those are the areas that are going to be reinfected, and they are the areas you check. Other parts of the lawn may be clean, might have the grub or two, but nothing worth worrying about.
How does a beetle get down so far to lay the eggs deep?
Oh, they burrow.
God, nature's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that beetle's dung?
Beetle dung?
No, is that the beetle's? Is that all that we need to know about grass grub?
Basically, the only other thing, like, you know, the insect killers, the like in the butcher shops in the old days that had the big thing
yellow
up
things,
there.
Yeah.
That zap. Now you can get nice modern ones. In fact, I've got one here in my office. Yeah, for anyone that wants to see.
Are there those, you plug them into the power?
Yeah, you plug that in. You can have that outside, but protected from weather, rain, because it's 2:30. Mosquitoes, moths, beetles will be attracted to the UV light. And away they go. They get zapped, 50,000 volts of static electricity.
You say that with such delight.
Yeah, incinerated.
You're incinerating these mosquitoes. You're starving to death the grubs. You're sort of like a one-man demolition, Wally.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, you can send us a text at 2057, any questions you have for Wally about anything. Wally can handle it. We're going to be talking plant reproduction, Wally.
Plant reproduction, right. Well, with plant reproduction, we are talking about growing plants from seed. Now, the interesting thing is this. I can't remember if I've told you about this one before. When you grow a plant from seed, just like in nature, where seeds fall to the ground, they sit there for a while, and then when the conditions are right, they germinate, and you have a very strong plant, right? As opposed to that, you can plant, like your veggie plants, your corn plants, or whatever, by buying the plants from the garden centre, or you can buy a packet of seed. Now, last year, I did a little experiment. I bought a couple punnets of sweet corn plants, and I planted them in a raised garden. And alongside, I had a packet of sweet corn seeds, and I popped them in at a nice spacing, right, as if they were plants. They both grew. The ones that I planted by seed were ready to harvest about 2 weeks before the other ones. No. They grew better, and they, and the reason is very simple, because when a seed germinates, it sends out a root system. Some have a tap root that goes down quite deep, like carrots, but they establish a strong root system. When you grow something and germinate it in a tray or whatever, of course, when it germinates, the roots can only go so far. In fact, they get messed up with the other ones who are rooting at the same time. So when you extract them, there's a bit of root damage, and those roots have got to re-establish when you plant out. Growing by seed, and this is a good tip too, I've found that if you want to grow fruit trees, you grow them from pips or stones, right? And you plant that in the place, that stone from your apricot or that stone from your plum or whatever, you put that where you want the tree to grow, and you put a stake next to it and let it grow. People that do that, within a couple of seasons, they'll have a small sapling tree and it will start producing fruit. It's very quick and it's very cheap because you, it's got you nothing to do.
It's free.
Yeah.
So in the shops, those punnets of seedlings, are not giving you this head start that you think.
Well, it kind of gives you a head start, but you lose in the long distance if you were to plant seeds at the same time, right? So it's convenient to go and buy the seedlings. Now, one of the problems we have too, of course, is these days, for the North Island anyway, a lot of the nurseries that grow the veggie plants for the home garden are up Auckland way or in areas where the weather is a bit better than, say, in Martin or Manawatu or Wellington, whatever. And quite often you can be bringing insect pests or eggs of the insects on the plants you buy, right? And so when you plant them up, and next thing, the caterpillars popped out and started eating your little cabbages up because there was eggs on the plant that you planted. So most important, when you are buying in seedlings, and tomatoes, for instance, with a psyllid, real problem for people that get psyllid happening in their gardens and affecting their tomatoes, potatoes and tamarillos. So it pays to check over very thoroughly anything that you buy in, because most of our problems we bring in to our gardens. It's either from friends giving us plants or going to a gala day and buying plants or whatever, we bring the problems in. And plants or seedlings that have been grown in soil possibly have root club root, and club root is a bad disease to have in your gardens.
So the recommendation for RCR listeners is to grow from seeds.
Yep, and it's very simple. All you have to do is prepare an area, make it nice and fine, or put some compost over the soil, and then you take, like, say, for instance, cabbages, right? So you've got your, all your little cabbage round seeds, and you put two together in the spot you want that cabbage to grow. Why do you put two? Because you double your chances of getting a strike and not having a gap. Then you space them out, and with cabbages, you're going relatively about a foot or so apart. And then when the two germinate, you look at them and you say, which one is the better looking one? And the one that doesn't look quite so good, with a pair of sharp scissors, you just cut it off at the base, right? Leaving its roots in the ground, not disturbing the roots of the other one. That cabbage will grow very quickly and give you a lovely cabbage to eat.
There's nothing better, is there, than growing vegetables?
And it's most exciting when you see all your little seeds germinating. Yes. It's kind of like, oh my God, they're all up and away. And
get a thrill after all these years?
Sorry?
You still get a thrill after all these years?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whenever I see something that's germinated, that life has come forth, my God, and I've helped create it in a little way.
I'm planting out beech trees. I grew them in my nursery because I wasn't sure where to put them.
Right.
And I've planted out, they've grown to 3/4 of a metre tall. And I've planted out 160 and staked them. And are keeping them watered for now because it's going to be dry over summer. But I'm so excited by these trees and when they look fresh, and I've given them MBL on their leaves and manured them, and I'm pretty excited about my trees, Wally.
Good. Actually, now here's a tip. And I've already had one person ring me up and say, look, we've got all these young trees planted out and it's already dry where we live in New Zealand and my parents are having to water them every day. Is there anything they can do to reduce the amount of watering that the trees need while they're establishing? And there is. Vapor Guard, the one that we use for frost protection, we now use it for stress guard and we also use it for reducing the amount of water a plant needs. So you get your Vapor Guard and you spray under and over the foliage. So you're doing on both sides of the leaves. So mm-hmm. You're giving the whole thing a good covering. The film sits on the plant, ideally to spray in sunlight, so it sets quicker, and then it will last there for about 3 months. Now, with the film on, it reduces the transpiration out of the foliage, which means around about 30 to 40% less water the plant requires. And yet, on the other hand, you have increased the plant's ability to photosynthesize and get more energy from the sun because the film acts as a sunscreen against UV, which affects the photosynthesizing aspect, right? So your plant grows faster because it's got more carbs from the sunlight. Also, if you are in a windy situation or you're near the beach or somewhere and you've got salt sprays and you've got wind burn from the, what's that? It stops all that. It just makes the re-establishment or the establishment of your tree or your shrub or your plants, that's much, much better.
Well, here's a query for me. Some of them, and I haven't staked them all yet, some of them I put 3 stakes and I put a wind guard around them, you know, that wind netting, because it gets very strong wind down the valley. Now, obviously beech trees grow in the shade, but I'm wondering if I'm affecting their ability to photosynthesize over summer.
Now, here's an interesting point. When we plant a new tree, we put a stake on the off-wind side.
Windward.
On the wind side, so it's blown away from the stake, or otherwise it's blown against the stake and it chafes it and rubs it. Now, you only leave that on for maybe one season. If you leave it on too long, it weakens the base of the tree because trees are supposed to flop about in the wind. And when they go backwards and forwards in the wind, they strengthen the base. And so if you leave your stake on too long and then later on, you get some really heavy winds, then the tree breaks because it hasn't built up its strength.
I figured that. Now, a forester that I was talking to at the weekend said, I only water them for a couple of seasons because otherwise they won't send their roots down deep.
True. Yep, yep. Because if you're surface watering all the time, not deep watering, of course, it will send its feeder roots up to the surface because that's where the moisture is, right? Bear in mind, though, with a tree has what we call a drip line. Yes. So when it rains, the leaves are designed to move the water down to the soil at the perimeter, which is the drip line. There are the feeder roots. And if you're going to feed a tree, where do you feed it? Not against the trunk, at the drip line. Except if you've got a citrus tree or rhododendron, the roots are directly underneath. So you feed them underneath.
It's complicated, Wally. It's complicated. Getting the most out of your fruit trees.
Sorry?
Getting the most out of your fruit trees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, what people don't realise is during the flowering and fruiting process, potash is vital, right? It assists with the flowering, it assists with the pollination, it assists with the development of the fruit, and it also assists with the flavour, right? So if something is lacking in potash, then you don't get the quality of fruit out that you would do otherwise. We have a product which I designed some years ago called Fruit and Flower Power, and it's a combination of magnesium and sulfate of potash in a prill form, so it's slow released, and anything that is flowering and fruiting, you put that some of that around on the soil to wash in to increase the crop that you're going to harvest and the flavour of the crop. You have people sometimes say to me, oh, my citrus tree, it's the fruit's dry and it's not got much flavour. Lack of potash, right? Any fruit that doesn't have flavour, etc., it's usually potash is the problem. So apply Fruit and Flower Power. That's to your tomatoes, your capsicums, your apricot tree, your apple tree, your plum tree, whatever, persimmon, avocado, in the drip line, sprinkle some Fruit and Flower Power, and then you'll have better fruit to eat and harvest.
And when do you do that?
Well, during the flowering and fruiting cycle.
Okay.
And ideally, once the tree starts to bud up or the plant starts to show buds and flowers, that's the time you start and you carry on every month, only a small amount, but so it's got a continual amount coming in until about a month before harvest, and then you can stop.
Very good. And we can get a hold of Wally. You can Google Wally Richards or go to 0800-466-464.co.nz and his new website will pop up. Or you can call him on that exact number, 0800-466-464, whatever. The great news is if you place an order, Wally will be ringing you to check that everything that's happening is what he's sending you is what you need. I think I cut you off on plant reproduction, Wally.
And plant production. Plant reproduction. Now, here's a little secret too. You grow, say, cabbages, veggies, whatever. Now, each season, when you've got your cabbages in, you should have a wee look at the crop and say, work out which one you think is the best-looking one, most vigour, best shape, whatever, right? And you don't harvest that. You let it go to seed. Then, when it goes to seed, you collect the seed and you put them in a little plastic bag, and there'll be literally hundreds and hundreds of seeds, more than you could ever use. So you take your seed and you put it in a plastic bag, you put cabbage and the date, and then you put it inside a glass jar with a lid and you put it in the fridge. That seed will be good for years, right? So next season, what you do is you take some of the seed out from last season, and you plant that in the ground, right? Once again, you do the same process. You look at the time of harvest, what's the best one? Leave that, let that go to seed, and you've got then a second generation. Within two or three generations, you will have seeds that are perfect for your conditions of soil, weather, etc. You have, you've kind of hybridized it, right? It's very selective. It will grow other in other places, but never as well as it will grow in your garden, because that's where its home is.
And seeds aren't cheap when you buy a few.
Sorry?
Seeds aren't cheap when you go and buy a few. So you're saving that money.
Oh, like, yeah. And the surplus seeds, like last season seeds that you haven't used, you can give them to friends or whatever, you know. They'll still get good plants out of it. But after a few generations, you could actually name the seed and call it Rodney's Special.
Oh, I got a text question for you, Wally.
Now, another good aspect too, it was seeds. You know how we get hybrids. Now, generally speaking, particularly with tomato hybrids and plant propagation, like at the beginning of the season, we go out to the garden centre and we buy a dozen tomato plants, say, right? You don't have to. If you're a bit tight for money, just buy one, because that one plant will produce laterals. Yes. And when those laterals get to about a couple of inches long, you carefully pluck them off, put them either into some water to get to root up, or just put them into a pot with some mix and keep it moist, and it will soon root up. And there's your next lot of plants to plant. And you can do that several times off the mother plant or then off the babes and have hundreds of tomatoes.
Isn't that amazing?
It costs you nothing but one plant to start with.
That's great, Wally. That's so
great. And if that's an expensive one, like you get some special tomato plants, which, oh, that's going to be $10 for one of those. Well, yeah, okay. Pay you $10 because you can turn it into 100 plants. No trouble at all.
And keep the seeds and sell them next year.
Yeah. Now, I find that tomato seeds generally come true to form, even if they're hybrids. So you will still get pretty good results similar to the parent.
Great.
My favourite seed is one that you can get from the likes of the new Plymouth place, Egmont Seeds. It's a little cucumber. You know the finger cucumbers you get in the supermarkets? It's got a funny name. It's Excellent something or other. But if you look up their catalogue, you'll see them. They are prolific, and they're ideal in a glass house or in a tunnel house because they're self-setting. They don't need a male-female flower situation, and you'll get untold of these lovely, crisp cucumbers.
Wonderful.
Yeah, little small ones, finger size.
Egmont Seeds. I have a question via text. We might need some clarification on this question, but see how you go. Hi, Rodney. Can you ask Wally, could we do that with flower seeds as well as plant? Oh, yeah, I've got it. As well as plant two together, Jan.
Can we do that with what? Sorry?
Plant seeds as flower seeds. You know how you were planting two together?
Yeah. Normally with flower seeds, depending upon whether they're expensive ones or not, is you just kind of scatter them a bit. Because with flowers, if two plants come together, it doesn't really matter so much because you're not trying to get a cabbage eat, right? You're getting a mass of flower. And that's what you're looking for. So you don't have to thin them out as you would do with veggie plants. And it just makes a more dense display. It keeps the flower plants from getting the same height because if they're competing for light, etc., they tend to be more stockier and yet flower prolifically. So there's no need to nip out the excess per se. In fact, if you, say, grow, what, daisies every year, right, just allow the plants to go to seed. Don't deadhead them, right? Allow some to go to seed, let the seed drop, and up they'll come at the right time following season. You don't have to go and buy anymore.
Nice. Here's a question, Wally. I have a brother and sister-in-law who deal to grass grubs at night. Is the spray toxic because we have small dogs who often stay with them? What would I need to be aware of regarding the spray Wally talked about or anything else that might they might happen to use? Thanks, Rob. So this is, they're not necessarily using your spray. They could be using some other spray. Would that be toxic to their dogs, potentially?
So they're using it on the grubs or the beetles?
Well, they're saying at night, deal to the grass grubs. I don't know.
Well, the grass grub at night will be deep in the soil. You're not going to be able to spray them, or they'll be in the soil still, right? So you're not spraying. They must be referring to the beetles.
Okay.
Now, if you're using pyrethrum, and it's whether it's Yates pyrethrum or my super pyrethrum or whatever, pyrethrum is deactivated by sunlight within 2 hours of the sun coming up and onto the spray. So no harm whatsoever. Also, you find that pyrethrum or permethrum, which is man-made pyrethrum, synthetically made, is in your fly sprays, right? Mm. And, of course, you're using fly sprays in the house, whether it's dogs or cats or whatever. And it's probably not really, really good for you to a point in a closed atmosphere. But outside, of course, it dissipates in the atmosphere very quickly. So,
yeah, quite safe. And if it's something else, Rob, you might need to find out what it is and give Wally a ring. Wally Richards, our gardening guru. You can find his webpage. Just Google Wally Richards or go to 0800-466-464.co.nz. You can ring him at 0800-466-464. Wally, lovely to talk to you. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.